You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Back in action after a nice little vacation. Rob Rang, my sidekick. OTA is officially underway across most of the league. 22 teams opening their OTAs today. The Seahawks, it's a mixed bag on whether or not the veterans are going to be there or not. Since reporters were not allowed to be on site today, I can't tell you which players did show up and which ones didn't, but that will become known as the week unfolds, and a few of these practice sessions are supposed to be open to the media. We'll get a better sense of whether or not those veterans really stuck with their guns and stayed away from OTAs or decided to show up. Hope everybody enjoyed their weekend and glad to have you listening in. This episode is brought your way by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's so weird seeing how this weekend played out in the sports world, Rob. You've got NBA playoff games with fans in the stands, and some of them don't even have masks on. Whether they're vaccinated or not, we don't know. But we saw Phil Mickelson win a major in golf, and he was getting swarmed by fans that were on the golf course. And we saw hockey games with fans. This time last year, all we had was the Chicago Bulls special on ESPN, The Last Dance. We didn't know when there was going to be sports again. And here we are in late May. We've got all these sporting events going on, and we can see normalcy trickling back into the NFL as well, with OTAs being conducted on the field, rookie minicamps recently happening on the field, and now the preseason schedule being revealed. I'm sure there were plenty of media people last year that were like, you know, not having preseason games, that might not be a bad thing. But I think there were a lot of things many of us took for granted. And I don't know that I'm necessarily in this category, but I know there are a lot of my fellow writers that cover the NFL that are going to be very happy to see exhibition games back in August.
Well, not only media folks, but I think the fans as well, Corbin. I mean, I think that, you know, the exhibition games of the NFL, you know, is one of those things that the people like to complain about a little bit. But I think that it's a lot of fun. It's kind of one of those, you know, kind of unofficial rites of fall. You get into that August, you know, time period when you start to, you know, in the training camp, you get to see the young players get onto the field for the Seahawks. And, you know, of course, it is a little bit different this year. For so long now, it's been that there would be four preseason games. Of course, the NFL has added one more regular season game and taken away one of the three preseason games. So Seattle has three games. It's interesting that the NFL is kind of going to the Wayback Machine there. It's almost like Roger Goodell and the schedule makers have forgotten that the Seattle Seahawks now play in the NFC West, not the AFC West. And while it's pretty consistent that Seattle has played a lot of those former AFC West foes, it's exclusive this year that they start off playing at the Las Vegas Raiders Saturday, August 14th at 6 p.m., then hosting the Denver Broncos is Saturday, August 21st at 7 p.m. And then the week after that, hosting again the Los Angeles Chargers Saturday, August 28th at 7 p.m. And to me, that is when the football season really starts getting going. I know there's a lot of beat writers out there who don't love the preseason as much as a talent evaluator like myself and like you, of course, as well. I like watching the young players and see who can make this actual NFL roster. And I love the players, the teams that they're going to be going up against. Starting with those Raiders, you want to talk about, has Seattle improved their pass rush? Have they improved their ability to go up against a dynamic tight end like a Darren Waller? The Las Vegas Raiders are going to give a heck of an opportunity to evaluate some of those players right off the bat.
And I think this is an especially critical year when you look at the fact that the Seahawks are going to be breaking in a new offensive coordinator. You can make sound arguments that preseason games are not a big deal, but for a team that is trying to learn a new scheme, those games are going to be critical, especially those early possessions where Russell Wilson is going to be executing the offense, and he's going to have some of the other starters out there on the field with him. Those snaps are going to be invaluable going into the regular season. If you're in year three under Brian Schottenheimer, it's a little different situation. You know the plays. You've just added some new wrinkles in the offseason. You don't need a lot of reps on the field. This is going to be a little different situation for the Seahawks, especially the offensive players, with this new scheme. The fact they are going to be able to get in the field, again, we don't know who's going to be out there for some of these organized activities and mandatory minicamp, how that's going to look. Pete Carroll referenced about a week ago that maybe they were going to make some changes to that to try to draw more players out to the facility. It's a very fluid situation, but nonetheless, all of those reps are going to be very important when you're trying to learn a new offense. And I guess what I'm most curious about here, and again, you and I are both in this category. I've always been a fan of preseason games because I like to be able to watch some of the players that are under the radar. And how many times have we seen guys like Troymaine Pope, Malik Turner, Jazz Ferguson, players like that, that became preseason superstars? And sometimes they don't last in Seattle. Sometimes they don't make the team. But it's always fun to see those breakout players that emerge on the big stage in preseason games in front of fans. There's hopefully going to be fans back at Lumen Field for those two home preseason games. But those players that take advantage of the opportunity, to me, has just always been an exciting time. And it really does make you feel like football has returned, even if those games don't count in the standings. So I'm curious how it's going to look with three games. Does that mean the third preseason game is now the one where you just have backups playing and Russell Wilson and company don't take any snaps? Or do teams play their starters in all three of those games because there's one less and they need those snaps to get ready for the upcoming season?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the really fascinating things this year, because you know how Pete Carroll is with that always compete mantra, as you just mentioned, with Shane Waldron as the new offensive coordinator. Seattle is likely to try and take advantage of every single opportunity they possibly have to be able to get a little bit more acclimated to the new scheme. I love the fact from a Seattle perspective that all three opponents, as we mentioned before, are AFC West opponents. So you're not playing against the division, not even playing against the conference. There's not a lot of travel involved. That initial trip to Las Vegas, of course, is, you know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours in the air. So a relatively easy flight for Seattle, which is historically has been one of the teams that have to travel the most during the regular season. And then to be able to host both those last two games in the preseason at home, I think it's the fans, if fans are in fact allowed back on into the stadium, then that allows them an opportunity to kind of to lube up those throats and be able to be able to hit the kind of the ground running, so to speak, when the real regular season begins. And hopefully the 12th man is back in full throat.
And I know the undrafted rookies are going to be the ones that are the most excited about the fact they get preseason games, because we talked about this countless times leading up to last season, that a lot of those players didn't get any reps going into the regular season aside from having mock scrimmages against their teammates. It really put them in an impossible situation. But your Cade Johnsons, Tamorian Terrys of the world, players that went undrafted and quickly signed to the Seahawks, they're going to get those reps. They're already getting opportunities on the practice field, having rookie minicamp and now OTAs. So it's going to be a different ball game. Again, this is better for the young players than what they went through last year. The veterans, maybe they can get by with having just a virtual offseason. But these young guys need those reps, especially in those exhibition games. They need those reps going into the regular season. So it's a big deal that we're going to have preseason football back in August. And maybe it'll be really nice just having three of them, and we'll get a little bit more impact from those games as well. We'll just have to wait and see how it looks. When we come back in the second quarter, Pro Football Focus released their annual offensive position-by-position rankings. Rob and I had so much fun last year investigating those that we are going to do it again, looking at everybody from Russell Wilson to new right guard Gabe Jackson. So we'll be assessing all those evaluations and letting PFF know whether we agree or not. When we come back for the second quarter, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Who doesn't want instant gratification? If you're looking for satisfaction, there's no need to wait. With Credit Karma Money, you could win cash reimbursements for debit purchases. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals for a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Last year, we did this for the first time, Rob. We were looking at Pro Football Focus's annual offensive position group rankings, which they base off of their play-by-play grading and their premium statistics, which we have access to. So we're able to use some of those as we look through these evaluations. But we had so much fun critiquing those rankings last year that we decided, why not do it again? And Pro Football Focus just released all of their offensive position-by-position rankings. So we're going to be looking at everybody from Russell Wilson all the way to Gabe Jackson and the offensive line, where Seattle's best players fit, going to be dishing out some key stats. And, of course, we're going to be making the determination whether they got it right or if they're a little high or a little low in their ranking of each particular Seahawk. So without further ado, let's start at the quarterback position. You and I think we would both agree that Russell Wilson is one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. He didn't necessarily play like it in the second half last year. Wasn't all his fault. But in the first half, he was your number one MVP candidate and was just lighting the world on fire. And when you consider the fact he threw a career-high 40 touchdowns, a franchise record 40 touchdowns, you and I would both agree he still belongs in that top five, and Pro Football Focus agreed as well. They put him in fourth, the only quarterbacks in front of him, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, and MVP Aaron Rodgers. This feels about right when you consider how he is stacked up. And looking at one of the key stats that really jumped out to me in their evaluation for Russell Wilson, over the last 5 years, he has made 214 big-time throws, and he has tied Rodgers and Brady for the best passing grade on 20-plus yard throws. So two of the most important assessments they have for the quarterback position. Russell Wilson has been elite in that category. So it seems just about right being at number four.
Yeah, this is one of the few grades that I am wholeheartedly going to agree with both you and Pro Football Focus, Corbin. I think that that fourth overall among quarterbacks is about where Russell Wilson should be placed. I can't make a strong argument to put him above Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, or Aaron Rodgers. I'm a real, real big fan of the improvements that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, among several other quarterbacks made in the NFL. But I don't know that you can make the argument that any of them were more consistent than Russell Wilson was. I love the statistics that you pointed out just then. I don't know how it is that you can put a real number on the clutch factor. And that's one of the things that I think that Russell Wilson really has demonstrated that he has that it factor. But I think at the same time, those two statistics that you just mentioned, the big time throws, the completion success on the throws of 20 yards or more, that just goes in with the tape that what we've seen as well, that he is a spectacular deep ball thrower. And that, again, he does have that clutch factor to him. So I'm looking forward to seeing if Russell Wilson can build upon his fourth place finish, among quarterbacks in 2022.
Let's look at the players that he's throwing the football to, because one of the big reasons that Russell Wilson had such a dominant first half last year is he benefited from having two elite talents on the outside in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And maybe this is the first spot where I was a little skeptical of where Pro Football Focus had their rankings for Seahawks players, because maybe DK Metcalf at 15th is just about right, because he still has had some issues with drops. But he's coming off a season with over 1,300 receiving yards, 10 touchdowns. He has been one of the elite deep ball threats in the league. One stat that really jumped out to me, He led the league last year in vertical route receiving yards, 475 yards just on vertical routes. And he's also seventh in the league the last 2 years in contested catches and broken tackles after the catch. So I find it hard to believe when you add all those stats together and you watch what he does in film that there are 14 receivers in the league that are better than DK Metcalf. But I think I can make an even bigger argument against ranking Tyler Lockett 22nd, because to me, those two are about on a level playing field, even though they play the game much different. Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett have the highest quarterback to receiver passer rating in the league over the last three seasons. Lockett's had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. He had 100 receptions last year. He's had a couple minor nicks and bruises, but he's played through them. Again, I don't see 21 receivers in the NFL, and I watch a lot of games, not just the Seahawks games. I don't see 21 receivers in the league that are better than Tyler Lockett. So I could make an argument that he is ripped off more on this list than DK Metcalf even is.
I would agree with that. I think that Tyler Lockett has been, just kind of perennially underrated. I think that DK Metcalf as well. I really think that Pro Football Focus is not giving either of Seattle's two wide receivers enough credit in this regard. I think that durability should jump up their grade a little bit, considering that some of the receivers who are ranked ahead of Seattle's, dynamic duo here have struggled with injuries, not only last year, but in previous years. I think especially with DK Metcalf that there, you got to look besides just how many times you catch the football and how many times you score touchdowns and what impact do they make in the running game, for example. Or DK Metcalf is actually absolutely spectacular. The same clutch factor that I just mentioned before with Russell Wilson, how about Tyler Lockett and the clutch factor that he offers on third down or in the red zone. Two, as you mentioned, two very different wide receivers, but two in my mind who are easily in the top 20. And DK Metcalf, I think you can make an argument that he should be in the top 10, if not top 5.
Now let's look at the backfield and tight end, because I was surprised Seattle had a player ranked in that second group. But then I remembered, Gerald Everett had some pretty good seasons with the Rams, even as a secondary tight end. And so looking at running back first, Chris Carson coming in at 8th among running backs. And to me, you could make an argument that maybe that's a little too high or a little too low. It depends how you view things, because he has had durability issues, but he's also a throwback running back playing in an offense that's been throwback in a lot of ways during his time in Seattle. So it's really a good fit. And when he's been on the field, he's been productive as a runner and a receiver. So maybe 8th is just about right when all things are considered. He can play like a top 5 back, but he's had some durability issues. And Gerald Everett coming in at number 21 might have been higher, but he had 6 drops last year, which dropped him a few pegs down the pecking order at tight end. He's going to have a chance now to be the guy as the tight end in Shane Waldron's offense in Seattle. So maybe this time next year, he'll be higher on this list, and maybe he'll have a new contract because he's only on a 1-year deal with the Seahawks. But that one seems like maybe that might even be a little bit high, saying he's the 21st best tight end in the NFL when he's been the number 2 guy behind Tyler Higbee for basically his entire NFL career.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on this, Corbin. I think that number 8 overall among running backs is pretty good for Chris Carson, as you just mentioned. When he's healthy, he's a top 5 back, in my opinion. He's absolutely spectacular. I think that you have to give him a lot of credit for the improvement that he's made, especially as a receiver out of the backfield. But the durability issues, the occasional fumble issues, the fact that the Seattle's offense is really catered to Chris Carson's talent, I think that all of those things kind of, temper your enthusiasm a little bit. So number 8 overall, I think, feels fair. I think that Pro Football Focus is giving Gerald Everett a little bit more credit than maybe he deserved based on last year. As you just mentioned, 6 drops a year ago, more than he had in either of his combined in his previous 3 seasons coming out of South Alabama. I just thought that he's coming off of a disappointing season for himself. I mean, this is a guy who is best known for his ability to catch the football, make people miss, overpower them, run away from them. He didn't do as much of that as I thought that his natural talent suggests that he could. He is not a dominant blocker. So if you want to look at it in that regard, then again, 21st overall among tight ends, I think that might be a little bit rich for what he performed last year, but I love that you mentioned, let's see what he does this year. I really think that Gerald Everett is going to explode for Seattle this year.
We'll see. This is going to be the perfect fit for him from a scheme standpoint, because he's been working with Shane Waldron ever since he came into the league. And we've been talking about that even before the Seahawks signed him, how it would be an ideal fit. He gets to potentially be the number one tight end. So this is the time. You're in the prime of your career. Again, he could be significantly higher on this list next year. If things don't pan out how Seattle hopes, then he might not be on the ranking next season. So I was a little surprised to see him that high. Now, maybe where I had my biggest gripes for Seattle were the offensive line rankings. This is not surprising, because Pro Football Focus has historically been more down on Seattle's offensive line than what I have been after combing back through the film. Dwayne Brown was a top five rated offensive lineman last year. It was a bounce back season of sorts. And I think a lot of people thought that he was at the end of the line, and then he went out and had a really good season. I think you can make an argument that he played at an all pro level at left tackle for the Seahawks. They have him at number 11 on their ranking. That seems a little bit low for a guy that just a year ago was in the top five for run blocking and pass blocking grades at the tackle position. That doesn't really add up unless your rankings are based on believing he's going to decline because of age this year. And I'm not sure that I agree with that logic there either. Brandon Shell didn't make the top 32. You can maybe make an argument he could have been at the back end of the list, but not a huge omission. Gabe Jackson, new right guard, is number 16. Seems about right. Not the best season of his career last year at the Raiders. Hasn't been quite as good the last few years. Seattle's hoping he's reinvigorated with a change of scenery. But this is the one that really is eating me up. Damian Lewis was an all-rookie selection by the Pro Football Writers Association last year. He started all 16 games. He had an outstanding run-blocking grade. His pass protection grade was hit and miss during the season. But find me 32 guards in the NFL that are better than Damian Lewis, and I'll show you somebody that does not watch football. And yet, he's not on this list. I don't understand it. I just don't get it, especially when this is an ascending player that I think is going to be much better in year two.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Brandon Shell, I think that Damian Lewis are notable, the fact that they're not listed on there, I think is kind of laughable. I think that you are applying a different grain scale than what Seattle likes to do. See, as we've talked about so many times, Corbin, Seattle is trying to put people on their backsides. Seattle is trying to run the football. And so if you are going to apply the same pass blocking focus that you graded the old school New Orleans Saints when they had Sean Payton, the old school New England Patriots when they had Tom Brady, as what Seattle does when they currently have Russell Wilson, currently have the franchise's most explosive offense, in its history, then I think that you have to kind of just broaden your perspective a little bit. Dwayne Brown absolutely should have been in the top 10, at least in my opinion, among offensive tackles. Brandon Shell, I was not a huge fan when Seattle signed Brandon Shell. I thought, hey, you're this is a little bit too much money, a little bit too much, assuming that this is going to be the guy. And he quieted me down, because I really thought that he played pretty damn well for Seattle, and certainly Damian Lewis as well. I think that they absolutely should be among the top 32 players at their respective positions, because obviously there's only 32 teams in the NFL. And so I thought both of them, and then Ethan Posick, 21st overall among the centers. I think that's fair. I think that you're seeing a player that in his first real season as a starter at the center position, I thought that he had his ups and downs, but at the same time, he has the size, he has the athletic ability, and now he has the experience. And it's going to be fascinating to see if he is able to build upon that number 21 overall ranking that he received from Pro Football Focus next year. Because if he does, then Seattle is going to look brilliant in bypassing one of the better center classes I've ever seen.
And I actually could make an argument. I think Posick might actually be ranked a little bit low based on Pro Football Focus's own grades. Because if you're looking at their true pass blocking formula, he finished in the upper half of the center position. And yet this would put him 21 out of 37. So that doesn't necessarily add up to me. I wouldn't expect him to be much higher than this. But really the one that bothers me is Damian Lewis not being on this list, because he was an all-rookie team performer. He started every game, and he played at a high level. And it's just baffling to me that Dwayne Brown would maybe be put 11th. Well, we're concerned maybe he's going to be slowing down now because he's getting older. Okay, well, if that's your logic, then why is a rising young player like Damian Lewis not in the top 32 for guards when he's coming out of his rookie season going into year two, and you're expecting he's going to take a big step forward? And so that's maybe the one on this list that I have the biggest beef with. You can argue about some of the other ones, but the omission of Damian Lewis is the one that left me scratching my bald head, just wondering, what are you doing? Why is this guy not on this list? But anyways, always tons of fun looking. It's always good to debate these type of things. And I think we'll have some defensive rankings to look at some point. They always come out with offense first because everybody wants to talk about scoring points and the quarterbacks and the big play receivers first, and then the defense comes second. We'll get to that in a future episode. When we return in the third quarter, we're going to continue our position by position depth chart review coming out of the draft, going back to defense. The pass rushers, the defensive end group, they've added some new pieces. They've got some returning young players. They're going to be fun to watch as well. We'll be checking out that position and making some early picks for the 53-man roster. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. We're going to continue our position-by-position post-draft depth chart review. So far, we've looked at positions such as safety and receiver. We're going to swing back to the defensive side of the football. Defensive end, the pass rushers. This was a huge problem for the Seahawks in the first half of the season in 2020. One of the big reasons why they were struggling to stop opponents in those first 8 or 9 games. But then they went out and they got Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals for a 7th-round pick. And his arrival just brought out the best in everyone. And they led the league in sacks from week 8 through the end of the regular season. It was an incredible 180-degree turn. And the Seahawks have taken a few more steps forward to continue improving that group this offseason, Rob. They re-signed Dunlap after they initially released him for a more team-friendly deal. They brought in Kerry Hyder from the 49ers. They brought back Benson Mayoa. And Alden Smith was signed to a 1-year contract as well. His future's kind of up in the air with some new legal issues that he's dealing with. But nonetheless, the team was able to re-sign some of their own pass rushers, and they also were able to bring in a few new ones to help further bolster this group that suddenly looks like it could be a strength for this defense.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I agree with you. I think that this could be a real strength for the Seahawks. And, you know, as much respect as Russell Wilson, Seattle's offense, and of course the Legion of Boom received, and appropriately so, for those Super Bowl runs, I think that not enough credit is given to the pass rush that Seattle was able to employ during that time, and just the depth that it provided. To me, this, at least on paper, this looks like the deepest pass rush that Seattle has had since those Super Bowl runs, and that should be very exciting for Seahawks fans. I love the way that you kind of describe the pass rush and how the team did a 180 with the addition of Carlos Dunlap. I mean, he is truly an ace. He is that number one starter that you kind of look for to be able to be that premier pass rusher. He's getting a little bit older up there, but he's got some of the tricks of the trade. He's got incredible length. He still has great burst. So to me, he is still your superstar. I think it's going to be fascinating to kind of see who's going to be the defensive end that starts opposite him. If Seattle is going to use that kind of traditional Leo, if they're going to use a little bit more of that bare front, look for a little bit of a bigger guy to play that defensive end, or if they're going to ask a strong side linebacker like Daryl Taylor, who of course was a rookie selected in the 2020 draft that obviously missed his entire season. But I just know watching him on tape at Tennessee and against SEC competition, how dynamic he can be as an edge rusher. You mentioned Kerry Hyder and what he is able to provide, Benson Mayoa as well. To me, again, this pass rush is really, really intriguing.
I think that's maybe the biggest thing to discuss at this point is you mentioned Carlos Dunlap, but we've got that base defensive end position that is going to be up for grabs. Kerry Hyder came through with 8.5 sacks for the 49ers last year, really was a savior for them after Nick Bosa went down and Solomon Thomas went down, both with season-ending injuries against the New York Jets early in the season. They had to get more out of Kerry Hyder, and he delivered for them. And the 49ers were able to stay in the wild card hunt until the last 3 or 4 games, and they just didn't have quite enough offense to be able to hang with Jimmy Garoppolo being hurt and some of the other injuries they had on both sides of the football. But nonetheless, career year for him. He's a guy that can play the three-tech position at 275 pounds. He's got the strength and agility to play that base defensive end position as well. He's going to give you a bit more pass rushing chops than LJ Collier does. I would make the argument LJ Collier is the better run defender of the two players, though. And so I'm really curious with how well LJ Collier played last year. I know he had only 3 sacks, but it seemed like every week he was coming through with 1 or 2 clutch pass rushes where he was at least getting some pressure on the opposing quarterback. And he had some big plays that aren't going to show up on the stat sheet. When he forced a holding penalty on former Seahawk J.R. Sweezy in that second game against the Cardinals that led to a safety, those type of plays don't show up on the stat sheet, but it indicates to you that LJ Collier was really making progress in his second season. And so I'm really fascinated. Do you go with the veteran like Hyder, who has had an up and down career where he's really flashed at times, then he's disappeared at times, or your former first round pick LJ Collier, who finally started to show some of the skills that they loved last season, bouncing back from a disappointing rookie year? Do you roll with him as your starter? To me, that might be one of the most exciting positional battles that is going to be unfolding at training camp in August.
Yeah, I like that you went back there, rather than kind of talking about the wild cards. To me, it's LJ Collier. I mean, I just think that for a lot of different reasons, some of which you just mentioned, Corbin. I mean, he is your former first round pick. He is still an ascending player, in my opinion. I think with Kerry Hyder, he's one of those kind of guys that if you can get him off the bench, that's where he's going to be the most effective. I look at the way that Seattle's schedule opens up. You're going to be going up against some of the better running teams in all of the NFL to start off the season. LJ Collier has more experience in Seattle's defense, obviously. So I think that because he is the better run defender at this point in his career, that he does have that upside. And again, just going off of the players or the schemes that you're going to be going up against early in the season, I think the LJ Collier is going to get that opportunity to be the starter initially. I really like Kerry Hyder in a little bit more of a change up kind of a role, just the way he uses his hands and his instincts. I think that sets him up to be able to play outside as well as inside. One player we haven't mentioned before, that I am still waiting for the explosive, a debut really in the NFL, his welcome to the NFL moment. And that's Rashim Green. I still believe in this young man, and I stress young man because he is younger than LJ Collier. He is younger than Daryl Taylor, and he is still a very talented football player. The light's going to come on for this kid. He is a pending free agent, and that's why I think that this is the year that he and Gerald Everett, as we talked about before, the tight end position, I think both those players are going to smell the dollars in the air, and they're going to absolutely explode for the Seahawks in 2021.
You got to wonder if some of the moves the Seahawks have made have been trying to pry at Rasheem Green, like, hey, it's year four. It's time for you to really turn the corner and step up. Because if you don't, there might not even be a roster spot for you. And the big reason that I'm throwing that out there, let's talk the wild cards now. Because to me, and you and I are probably going to go in different directions here, there's a lot of different interpretations you can make for wild card. But my wild card is the other rookie from last year's draft class. Daryl Taylor didn't play a snap, but the fifth rounder, Alton Robinson, played some critical snaps for the Seahawks, especially in the second half of the year, and he gave them four sacks, and a few of those sacks came in clutch situations towards the end of the game. One of them was late in the fourth quarter against the Cowboys. A couple plays later, Ryan Neal intercepts Dak Prescott in the end zone. That was set up by that sack. The Washington game, he had a big sack in the second half that helped the Seahawks hold on in that one after they squandered a double-digit lead. And so I look at Alton Robinson, a player that can play both end spots. He's around 270 pounds. The motor that he displayed all of last year, the fact that he's going to be going into his second season, I think he's a guy that a lot of people are forgetting about with all the additions the Seahawks have made, that he could come in and, yeah, we've got these veterans, but if Alton Robinson comes in and outplays him, he's going to be the one getting the snaps. And I think there's a chance that we could see that happen. So players like Benson Mayoa and Rasheem Green, you better show up, because if not, Alton Robinson's going to be ready for that opportunity, and he's going to seize that chance at more playing time. To me, he's the ultimate X factor of this group.
Well, the ultimate X factor of the group is Alden Smith, but that's just because you don't know if he is going to be X'd out of the league or if he's still going to be on the roster at that point. But his talent is just undeniable. I mean, he is the most gifted of Seattle's pass rushers, in my opinion. It's just whether or not that's going to actually translate into success. But no, I think you make an excellent point about Alton Robinson. I mean, we just in the second quarter, of course, we were talking Pro Football Grades, and that's so much of that is stat-based. Well, here's a stat for you. Alton Robinson, with his limited opportunities a year ago, Corbin, you may already know this, but I don't know that all of our listeners do. I mean, he was top five in the NFL as far as rookie pass rushers in terms of sacks. And so the fact that he didn't have that many opportunities and yet still was as productive as he was, especially down the stretch, I think that suggests that his upside is still very much yet untapped. Now, at the same time, this is what he did at Syracuse. He was up and down and up and down. And so the fact that he played as well as a rookie, there is some concern of whether or not he's going to be able to build upon that in his second season. But he is a talented player. If he plays with the same hunger and tenacity, physicality that he showed a year ago, especially given all the talent that Seattle has on the defensive line, I agree with you. Alton Robinson as well as Alden Smith, I think, gives Seattle a different level of wild cards than they've had in their deck of cards in a long, long time.
And this is going to be a really fun competition if all eight players that we have on the depth chart currently, and I didn't include Marcus Webb on there, but there's a few other players they have signed that can also rush off the edge. But this is going to be an exciting competition, because I don't know that they can keep all these players. If Alden Smith is able to join the team for training camp and is able to participate, we know what kind of a big-time talent he is. But it looks to me like one of those situations where there's going to be an odd player out. And again, that's why I said Rasheem Green, you better step up. Because if he doesn't, the Seahawks can't hold eight or nine defensive ends on their roster. Even with Daryl Taylor playing the Sam spot, they are not going to be doing that. And so really, that's where the Alden Smith X factor comes into play. Because if he's there and he's playing well, the team's not going to want to cut ties with him, especially because he's on a veteran minimum contract. He's cheap. And so there's just a number of dominoes in this position group that are going to make it a really fun one to watch if everybody's there. There's still question marks with Alden Smith, obviously, being the biggest one. And the fact that they're talking about Daryl Taylor moving to Sam linebacker, playing that Bruce Irvin type role, there are some little wrinkles in there that we have to account for before training camp gets here. But I think this is going to be one of the most competitive position groups on the roster. And that's a good thing for a group that really struggled for about a year and a half. And it looks like finally the Seahawks have a strong core that's a good blend of veterans as well as young players that should be able to get after opposing quarterbacks. That's going to be a big deal for this defense heading into the 2021 season. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on all the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we return for our Tuesday episode, we're going to continue our Throwback Tuesday series, revisiting Seattle's 2020 games. We'll be looking at Week 5 and Week 7, a thriller against the Arizona Cardinals in the desert. A couple of really challenging games for the Seahawks. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.